Welcome back to the deep dive. So we have quite the stack on the desk today. We've got these course modules from the Introduction to DeFi series, specifically Module 3, Lesson 11. But we've also got this whole collection of postmortems. I mean, they are literally the autopsies of some huge financial disasters.
It really is a bit of a crime scene investigation today, isn't it?
It is. Usually when people talk about decentralized finance or DeFi, the conversation is, all about the upside. Be your own bank, unstoppable yields.
Financial freedom, all the
Right,
buzzwords.
it's very aspirational. But today, we are flipping that coin over. We're looking exclusively at the hazards.
Which is, I would argue, the more important conversation. In this space, what you don't know won't just hurt you, it will. It will absolutely liquidate you.
Exactly. The brochure always looks nice, but we need to read the warning label.
Yeah.
And to frame this, I want to start with an analogy from the source material that I just thought was perfect.
Oh, the restaurant one.
Yes. The chain versus the pop-up.
I love this one.
Right. So picture traditional finance, your big banks, your insured brokerage accounts as a massive chain restaurant. You know the one.
It's on every corner. The carpet is beige.
The menu is laminated. The food is acceptable.
It's consistent. You order the burger, you get the burger. It's not going to change your life, but you know exactly what you're getting.
Precisely. It's not winning a Michelin star. It's not exciting. But, and here's the key, there's a health inspector. There are standards. There's a manager you can complain to.
Right.
The risk of getting like severe food poisoning is effectively zero because the whole system is designed to be sanitized.
That's the walled garden of centralized finance. You pay for that safety with lower returns and a lot of paperwork.
Okay, now contrast that with DeFi. The sources describe DeFi as this wild, hyped-up pop-up restaurant.
Yeah, the one that just opened in some abandoned warehouse.
Exactly. No sign on the door, line around the block.
You go in, and the chef is some anonymous prodigy who just goes by his screen name. The food might be the best thing you've ever tasted. You might discover yields you didn't think were possible, but there is no health inspector. The kitchen is wide open. Who knows what's going on back there?
So you have this binary outcome. You get a world-class meal that makes you rich, or you end up in the hospital.
That is the trade-off we are unpacking today. So if you want to eat at the warehouse, how do you spot the food poisoning before you take a bite?
Let's dig in. So let's start with the kitchen itself. In a bank, you have layers of people checking things. In DeFi, the manager is a smart contract. It's just code.
And that's the first major hazard, smart contract risk. This is the foundational risk. DeFi protocols are just software programs running on a blockchain.
And Solver has bugs.
Always.
Yeah.
We're used to bugs in our phones, right?
Okay.
An app crashes, you restart it, it's annoying, but whatever.
Right, it's not catastrophic.
In DeFi, a bug isn't a glitch. It's a bank fault with the door left wide open. And because the code is open source, anyone can read it. That includes the good guys and the bad guys.
And if there's a flaw in that logic,
It will be found and it will be exploited.
and it's not like they take a little bit, it's a race to drain the pool.
It's an instant drain. And unlike a bank, there is no undo button. You can't call the blockchain CDO and ask for a rollback. Once that transaction is confirmed, the money is just gone.
The numbers in here are staggering. They mentioned the Ronin Bridge hack from 2022.
Oh, yeah, that's the poster child for this. Attackers found an exploit in how the validators were set up. In one swipe, $600 million.
600 million.
Yeah.
That's the GDP of a small country. And it was just keystrokes.
And that's just the big one. The
Oh.
data indicates over $200 million is stolen annually from smaller protocols. It's a constant state of siege.
But here's where I get a little stuck, and I think a lot of listeners might too. I look at these DeFi websites, and they all have these badges on them, audited by Certik, audited by.
The audit fallacy. This is one of the most dangerous misconceptions in the space.
Because it gives you a false sense of security.
Exactly. An audit is a professional review. It is absolutely necessary. But, and this is a massive buy, but an audit is a snapshot in time. It is not a guarantee. It is not an insurance policy.
So a project can be audited and still have a huge hole in it.
It happens all the time. Maybe the auditor missed something. They're human too. Or, and this is really common, the project updates the code after the audit and introduces a new bug.
Right, like mixing two safe chemicals together and accidentally creating an explosion.
Yes, that's composability risk. So if I see audited, I just treat it like, okay, someone looked at this. It's better than nothing, but it is not bulletproof.
So what's the actual metric for safety? If audits aren't enough, what is?
The only true auditor in DeFi is time. We call it the Lindy effect, a protocol that has held billions of dollars for, say, 5 years without being hacked. Is significantly safer than one that launched last week with 5 audits.
Because the honeypot has been sitting there. If it could have been hacked.
It probably would have been by now. Exactly. Hackers follow the money, so a long track record is worth more than any certificate.
Okay, stick to the battle-tested stuff. Don't be the test dummy.
Precisely.
All right, so that's the code breaking. But the research points out something almost scarier. You can lose everything, even if the code works perfectly.
Yes. This is where we move from technical risk to financial risk. The machine is working as intended, but it's crushing you anyway.
Let's talk about liquidation risk. This feels like the margin call of the crypto world.
It is, but on steroids. A huge part of DeFi is borrowing. You lock up your ETH as collateral and you borrow stablecoins against it.
So you get cash without selling your assets. Sounds great.
It is, until the market moves.
Yeah.
So let's walk through the math. Let's say you have $10,000 worth of Ethereum. You lock it up. The protocol lets you borrow against it, so you borrow $8,000.
Okay. So I have $10,000 in assets, $8,000 in debt. I'm solvent.
For now. But crypto is volatile. Let's say the price of Ethereum drops by just 10%. Your collateral is now worth $9,000. Your debt is still $8,000.
That's getting tight.
It's too tight for the protocol. The code is designed to protect the lenders, not you. If your collateral value falls below a certain threshold, the smart contract automatically triggers a liquidation.
And it doesn't call me to ask for more money.
No phone calls, no emails, no grace period.
Mm.
The moment that threshold is crossed, even for 1 second, the protocol sells your Ethereum.
And it sells it at the bottom of the dip.
Instantaneously. And to add insult to injury, it charges you a liquidation penalty.
So my $9,000 of ETH gets sold. The $8,000 loan is paid back. There's a penalty?
Yeah.
I might walk away with, what, a few $100?
Maybe. You started with $10,000, took a loan, and because of a pretty standard market dip, you were wiped out.
That is just ruthless.
DeFi operates block by block. Every 12 seconds on Ethereum, your fate is decided.
So how do you avoid this? I mean, it seems obvious, but people still mess it up.
You have to manage your health factor. Greed kills you here. If you borrow 80%, you are just asking to be liquidated. If you borrow, say, 20 or 30%, you can survive a huge crash.
Don't be greedy. Leave a massive buffer.
A massive buffer. Assume the market will drop 50% tomorrow. If your position survives that, you're probably safe.
Okay, now, there's another financial term in here that I have to admit always confuses everyone. Impermanent loss.
Right.
It sounds like it's no big deal, you know. Oh, it's impermanent. It'll come back.
And that name is probably the biggest trap in DeFi. It sounds temporary. It often isn't.
Okay, break this down. This happens when you're providing liquidity, right?
Correct. So in DeFi, you can be the exchange. You put 2 tokens, say ETH and a stablecoin, into a pool so other people can trade between them. In return, you earn trading fees.
Sounds like simple passive income.
But inside the pool, there's a mechanism that always tries to keep the value of the two sides equal. So if the price of ETH skyrockets, the pool automatically sells some of your ETH to buy more stablecoins to keep the balance.
Wait, so if my asset is going up in value, the pool is selling it.
Exactly. It is selling your winners to buy the losers. It's the total opposite of what a good trader does.
That hurts my brain.
So impermanent loss is just the difference between what you have now in the pool versus what you would have had if you had just left the tokens in your wallet and did nothing.
So there are scenarios where I make money in the pool, but I made less money than if I had just held.
All the time. And if that difference is bigger than the trading fees you earned, you've technically lost money relative to just holding. You took on all this risk for a worse outcome.
That is a serious reality check. Okay, so we've covered internal risks, the code breaking, the math breaking. What about outside threats? Let's talk about oracles.
Right. A smart contract on Ethereum, it doesn't know the price of gold or Apple stock or even the price of Bitcoin in dollars. It's a closed loop. It needs someone to tell it.
And that messenger is the oracle.
Correct. But what happens if the messenger lies? This is oracle manipulation.
So how does an attack like that actually work?
Well, imagine a lending protocol uses a single source, let's say a small low-volume exchange, to check the price of some token.
A small exchange, not a lot of trading going on.
Exactly. An attacker can go to that small exchange, buy up a huge amount of that token, and just artificially spike the price by like 1,000% for a few minutes.
So the price on that one little exchange is completely fake.
But the Oracle sees it and reports it to the DeFi protocol. Hey, this token is now worth $1,000 instead of $10.
And the DeFi protocol just believes it.
If it's poorly designed, yes. And then the attacker uses that fake inflated price to borrow millions of dollars of real assets against their now worthless token.
Wow.
By the time the price corrects, the attacker has vanished with the money.
So how do we as users avoid this?
You have to look at where they get their data. You want protocols that use decentralized oracles, like Chainlink. They pull prices from dozens of sources. If one source gets manipulated, the system just ignores it.
Okay. And speaking of red flags, let's talk about the outright scams, the rug pulls.
The classic exit scam.
I want to play a quick game. I'm going to pitch you a project, you tell me. Red flag or green light?
Okay, I'm ready.
Scenario A. A new project launches. It's offering 10,000% APY.
Stop. Just stop right there.
But there's more. The team is anonymous, just cartoon avatars on Twitter, no website, just a Telegram group. And they're saying, hurry, the pool is filling up.
That is a red flag burning in the center of the sun.
Okay, break it down. Why?
One, 10,000% APY is impossible math. It's bait. Two, anonymity means zero accountability. And three, the urgency. Scammers always want you to rush. This is a classic rug pull. They collect deposits, then disappear.
Okay. Scenario B, a lending protocol. It's been live for 3 years. It has $2 billion locked up. The team has public LinkedIn profiles, real experience, and it lists three audits from major firms.
Green light. Well, green relative to DeFi anyway.
Why the hesitation?
Because risk is never zero. But here you have the Lindy effect. 3 years is a long time. You have skin in the game with a public team. And high TVL means the market trusts it. It's an investment-grade protocol, not a casino.
So the cheat sheet for scams is, if it offers magical returns and the founders are hiding, run.
If it sounds too good to be true in crypto, it is absolutely a scam.
All right, we've blamed the code, the math, the scammers. We have to address the final risk factor, the one looking back at us in the mirror.
User error, the human element.
Yeah, the source material is pretty blunt about this. We are our own worst enemies.
In traditional finance, the system is designed to tolerate some mistakes. If you send money to the wrong account, the bank can often reverse it. You lose your credit card, they send a new one.
The system has guardrails.
In DeFi, there are no guardrails. It is code is law. If you tell the blockchain to send your life savings to a burning trash can, it will do it. It won't ask, are you sure? It just executes.
That's a terrifying amount of pressure. What are the most common ways people mess up?
The classic is the fat finger, mistyping an address. One wrong character, and the money goes to a wallet that doesn't exist. It's gone forever.
That makes my palms sweat just thinking about it.
Then there's the seed phrase issue, that list of words that's your master key. You lose it, you lose your money, you give it to a phishing site posing as support, they take your money.
And there's one more subtle one mentioned here, unlimited approvals.
Yes. This is a technical one that catches so many people. When you want to use a DeFi app, you have to grant it permission to spend your tokens.
Right, the approve button.
And by default, to save on fees, many apps ask for an unlimited allowance, meaning I grant this contract permission to take all of this token from my wallet at any time in the future.
Wait, what? So if I approve a dodgy contract, they can come back later and take the rest.
Exactly. If that contract gets hacked 6 months from now, the attackers can use that permission you signed ages ago to drain your wallet.
That's like giving a waiter your credit card and saying, charge whatever you want, whenever you want.
It is, and people just click confirm without reading.
So how do we mitigate our own fallibility?
Paranoia is a virtue. First, test transactions, always. If you're moving $10,000, send $5 first, make sure it arrives, then send the rest.
It costs a little extra, but it's cheap insurance.
Second, read what you are signing. If a random site asks for unlimited access to your stablecoins, just reject it. Or use tools that let you edit the approval down.
And never, ever type your seed phrase into a computer unless you are actively recovering a wallet, I assume.
Never. No customer support agent will ever ask for it. If they do, they are a scammer. Period.
Okay. We've covered a lot. The restaurant might give us food poisoning, the robot chef might glitch, and we might accidentally drop our wallet in the deep fryer.
That is a vivid, if slightly depressing, summary.
Yes. Let's wrap this up with a survival guide. If our listener wants to dip their toes in, what's the cheat sheet?
It really boils down to three personal DeFi safety rules. Rule number one, position sizing.
Don't bet the farm.
Never bet more than you can afford to lose. Assume any money you put into a smart contract could go to zero. If that happens, it should be a bad day, not a ruined life.
Rule number two.
Diversify. And I don't just mean buy 5 different meme coins. I mean diversify across different protocols and even different chains. If everything is in one protocol and it gets hacked, you're wiped out.
Don't put all your eggs in one smart contract basket.
Exactly. And rule number three, stay informed. This space moves at light speed. Risks change. You cannot set it and forget it like a savings bond. It is an active participation sport.
It really all circles back to where we started. The freedom of DeFi is incredible. You have total control.
And total control means total responsibility.
Which leads me to our final thought. We love to complain about banks, the fees, the hours, the bureaucracy.
Right, we're paying for a safety net.
We are paying for someone else to worry about security. We're paying for someone to reverse the transaction when we screw up. We're outsourcing the anxiety.
Sure.
In a world without banks and DeFi, you get a promotion you never asked for. You are now the CEO of your own money. But you're also the security guard. You are the fraud department. And you are the customer support desk.
And if the security guard falls asleep on the job, there is nobody else to fire.
Exactly. So the question isn't just, do you want the high yield? The real question you need to ask yourself is, are you actually ready for that job promotion?
That is the question. And for many people, the answer might be no. And that is perfectly okay.
Something to chew on. Thanks for listening to this deep dive. Stay safe out there. Check those URLs twice, and we'll see you next time.
Stay paranoid.